Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, February 10th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 29 degrees, and according to my forecast, fog and mist here in upstate New York. Not sure. I saw the weather is going to start deteriorating from here on out. It is very cloudy, and we have snow on the ground, and we will be getting snow for the next 5, 7, 10 days. So, should be fun. So, where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Greed Kills Science, $1.8 billion for Zika and Wolbachia mosquitoes. And that's kind of where we ended up the show. We've been talking about Zika and, you know, this manufactured panic over a disease that was never thought to even be on the radar screen for developing any type of vaccination like they did with some of the other tropical mosquito diseases such as dengue that just was released and announced at the Davos conference. Sanofier came out with a dengue vaccine, and they are beginning phase 3 human trials in Brazil. There were a few countries they listed, but Brazil just inked on. But this Wolbachia is one of the methods. We talked about CRISPR and the slicing and dicing of genes and being able to genetically modify these mosquitoes to not be able to properly reproduce. And that pretty much is what all this technology comes down to. And it's really interesting to note that a lot of these companies messing around with insects to help cure diseases, let's say, a lot of that funding has come from sprinkle funding and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And they've been doing it for as long as I've been watching. So probably the last 5 years, and who knows how far back that goes. And what year are we in? We're in 2016, so even more than that, because I right now see something from Science Mag from 2010 that mentions them as well. But, you know, we dug into the United States former biowarfare program. We had shown how they had been experimenting with using insects as disease vectors to spread disease for biowarfare. Well, here's something that's interesting. You know, so these genetically modified mosquitoes now, there's been lots and lots of debate until just recently. You debate now and you get labeled a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic. But back just a few years ago, before all the scientists were paid off with gobs and gobs of money from government agencies or from philanthropic foundations, we actually still had some scientists who stood up and said, hey, you know, we should take this with a lot of caution because there are big dangers in what we're doing. I mean, you go back, you might have to go to page 26 on your Google search engine results, but you'll find it if you have some perseverance. Well, there's a story here that came out of John Rappaport's blog. And we had talked about these a long time ago, but he actually found the quote. So I want to look at these. Here is something that we all remember back from the day. Bill Gates with his jokes about the mosquitoes and releasing them at his one big TED conference meeting where he was discussing how mosquitoes could help cure disease. And, of course, the whole room freaked out when he released these mosquitoes. But from that point on, people have not been really paying attention to what Bill Gates has been doing with mosquitoes. So anyway, let's take a look at this. Zika, GE mosquito bite, deliver flying vaccine. That's what the title of the story is. It says people are discussing whether genetically modified mosquitoes could have spread Zika, which, again, still nobody knows. You know, they, of course, say that that theory is crackpotty, but it's just as crackpotty as Zika coming out of the blue and mutating to the point where now it says killer disease. that's causing microencephaly on such large scales, though they've only been able to prove 17 babies born with microencephaly actually have the Zika infection. People are discussing, though, whether genetically engineered mosquitoes could spread Zika, the virus that causes nothing, but rather look to the future when such biting mosquitoes could deliver flying vaccinations against the virus that causes nothing. And I wanted to read that because, you know, we already know that mosquitoes can spread disease. I mean, we already know that female mosquitoes, when they bite you, can spread whatever they're infected with. We've read about CRISPR technology and how easy it is now to slice and dice on a computer, copy and paste, and put the genome from some other, you know, genes from some other organism into your organism that you're working on. So how much of a stretch is that? Because I don't think it is. And like I've said before, even if the ones that were doing all this were 100% benevolent, we got DIY kits now at the kitchen table that are going on here, sale here very soon. You know, who's to say something like this couldn't happen out in the wild? Or again, with mutations, I read about 3 different scientific studies yesterday in science journals. And again, we discovered once from the NYU students study that then went viral about how the majority of the FDA approved published studies that are out there have either been proven fraudulent or false and were never redacted. So you really can't even trust any type of scientific study. But we also discovered in the story we did yesterday that the majority of the colleges, and we already knew this, are collecting large funds from different governmental or corporate organizations, philanthropic organizations. And so they want the money. You don't have the funding, the work doesn't get done. And so just like advertisers, when you take on advertising, you got to bite your tongue and be careful what you say. Well, when you take money from the lizard's den, you can't talk bad about the lizards. You know, that's just what happens. So I don't know if we really could trust much of anything that's in studies anymore, sadly. It's a big free-for-all. But in some of the studies that I was reading yesterday, there was great concern about the potential of making genomic changes to organisms. And because we don't understand, and I've said that so many times, we don't understand. We've only been playing with this technology for a few years. And even though things are moving at an exponential rate as far as the ability to do things, to make ourselves gods, to cross pigs and humans and cows and all this crazy stuff that they're doing, just because we can do it doesn't mean that we understand the consequences, right? It's like a 16-year-old learning to drive. And, you know, sure, they can push the pedal and turn the wheel, but they have no idea what's going to happen if they've never done it, like driving a rear-wheel drive car in the winter when it's below 20 degrees going through an intersection. They don't know that. They haven't experienced it or experimented with it yet. And that's my point. You know, I saw something from Oxitec, the GM mosquito maker, yesterday that had said, oh, we're so sure that nothing bad's going to happen. We've done 100 generations of these mosquitoes. 100? So in 100 generations in a lab without any external influences, you are so 100% certain that you're going to bet the farm. You know, the other thing in that same study from Oxitec that I was reading is that the guy, the researcher from Oxitec, said like 5 times in that story, well, you got to make sure there's no tetracycline around. We would never, ever release these mosquitoes in a place where there was tetracycline, ever. You know, never, ever. And it ends up, right, the whole Brazilian thing, there's tetracycline everywhere. So that was part of the big issue. But anyway, let's go back to this flying vaccinations. So They're tinkering with these mosquitoes, you know, to, of course, cure global illness and to cure the scourge that is going to kill us all. The virus that doesn't really make anyone sick. And I saw, by the way, Hawaii just declared a state of emergency now for dengue. So, ho-ho, better get out that dengue vaccine. But, you know, as they start learning how these genes splice and dice, they could put anything in here. They could have flying smallpox freaking mosquitoes if they wanted. In a previous article, this is Rappaport, I've established the connection between Zika and birth defects. It's entirely and utterly unproven, and still it is quote-unquote suspected. But that isn't stopping the World Health Organization. No, they declared a state of emergency. And now Obama is begging Congress for $1.8 billion to fund the CDC and to help all these third world nations now fight dengue by funding mad science gone mad. The race for the vaccine is on. It says, but this isn't stopping the World Health Organization and no, any of the other associations now that want to cash in on this. But in the wake of all the madness, here are a few hints and clues about a possible flying vaccine. And this is the part I wanted to get to. Out of sciencemag.org, and these are Science Mag and Science Daily are two sources that I reference frequently. Sciencemag.org, March 18, 2010, titled Researchers Turn Mosquitoes into Flying Vacciners. This was in 2010, guys. A group of Japanese researchers has developed a mosquito that spreads vaccine instead of disease. And even the researchers admit, however, that regulatory and ethical problems will prevent the critters from ever taking me. Now, when has ethics stopped any of these guys at all? Because I don't believe that there are any ethics out there. When you are editing human embryos in a lab already, okay, they just approved that. We saw that last week in the UK. When you're mixing human and bovine or human and swine DNA in a lab and growing creatures out of that, where are the ethics? You know, what happened to all of the outrage in this country back just a few years ago? I mean, it's probably more than a few years now, Ronald Reagan. You know, but hey, those years went in a flash. But you know, back from the days when Ronnie Reagan was in office and they were begging for stem cell research, but stem cells came from aborted fetuses. And so on ethics, he stood his ground and said, no, we're not doing stem cell research. Though, like I've said before, ironically, in the end, that research probably could have staved off some of his mental decline at the end of his life. But I mean, since that time, and I don't even know, honestly, because, you know, he talked out of one side of his mouth and people talk about how great Ronnie Reagan was. But I remember I was just out of high school and college at that time, and us making punk. I had a friend who had a band, and we made this punk rock song about Reagan and Oliver North and the Iran-Contra scandal and all the stuff. I mean, there was the red button. We were being groomed for being destroyed by Russia's nuclear weapons. I mean, that was not a good time. So they look back now and they're like, oh, when Ronnie Reagan was president, but that wasn't a good time either. But anyway, ethics have gone completely out of window. So it just makes me joke that they're like, oh, where are the ethical issues? We can't do this because, you know, it's just so, so bad. I don't think that ever stopped any of these guys. But anyway, regulatory and ethical problems will prevent the critters from ever taking wing, at least for the delivery of human vaccines. Well, think about it. Wouldn't that be a cheap and easy way for good old Billy Gates to get some of his newfangled medicine into the continent of Africa. You know, now they don't have to go with peacekeepers and guns to go, or troops in Ebola land to go vaccinate people. They could just release 1 million genetically modified mosquitoes with some sort of vaccine cut into the genome. And it wouldn't be that difficult. Now, we also looked at them messing around with vaccinations and food, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But anyway, let's go back to this. Again, out of sciencemag.org. No regulatory agency would sign off on that, and that's the using mosquitoes as human vaccines to deliver human vaccines, says molecular biologist Robert Sinden of Imperial College London. Releasing the mosquitoes would also mean vaccinating people without informed consent, an ethical no-no. So vaccinating people without their informed consent is an ethical no-no. But vaccinating people who don't understand the ramifications of the new technologies that you've put into their vaccine is ethical, right? We discovered, digging into a whole bunch of things, but I remember specifically Gardasil. Digging into the Gardasil vaccine, it has nanotechnology in it. It's delivering a payload. It's using some sort of RNAi, and honestly, I don't remember. It was so long since we did that. We dug into that new Gardasil 9. They're using RNAi technology and delivering payloads with nano and then putting it into our prepubescent sons because they told us it would prevent anal cancer, and daughters. I mean, I would say that that also is unethical. Preying on the fears of a parent who wants to do best for their child, but not explaining exactly what is in the vaccination that you're injecting into that child, nor what the real risks are. I've seen so many stories of people who have been injured by the Gardasil vaccines. Yet, anytime you talk about it, oh, it's just a real small number. Oh, you tinfoil hat wearing lunatic. I would say that that goes against ethics, absolutely. You know, and now they're getting rid of religious exemptions and forcing people at work. You know, if you're going to work in a healthcare facility, you're going to have to get vaccinated, get your flu vaccine and whatever. You know, informed consent is one thing, but informed consent with then being forced to get it is another. Or half-baked informed consent and then telling you it's all going to be okay, I'm the one in charge and I know better. I mean, that's an abusive relationship. That's like having a psychopath as somebody that you trust. Giving you the green light that it's okay because you trust them, because they are the one in authority, and they're telling you that it's for your own good. Yet on the other side, they're getting kickbacks from pharmaceutical companies and Hawaiian trips and all kinds of research dollars. And it's just, the whole thing is just so beyond disgusting. But don't worry about it, because we have so many ethics in the medical and the research field. And none of us are bought out, you know. We'll never release these mosquitoes cut with something to give you something that you don't know about. Never. We weren't ever messing around with bio warfare with insects. No, we don't know anything about it. Yoshida concedes, and this is in Japan, mind you. And I would say maybe Japanese scientists might have a little bit or even probably a lot more ethics than we have over here. Yoshida concedes that the mosquito would be, quote-unquote, unacceptable as a human vaccine delivery mechanism. But hey, if not mosquitoes for vaccine delivery, how about parasites? And yeah, we're going to talk about that as well. Mosquito bites deliver potentially new malaria vaccine. In this paper, we show, and this is out of Science Daily. This is 9/11/2013. In this paper, we show that genetically engineered parasites are a promising, viable option for developing a malaria vaccine. And we are currently engineering the next generation of attenuated parasite strains with the aim to enter clinical studies soon. I wonder if this is talking about the Wolbachia bacteria that we ended the show with yesterday. The one that makes the insects that are infected with it sterile, or it turns male mosquitoes into females, or it, I think we read it, infected the sex organs, or it caused cytoplasmic incompatibility. So only certain mosquitoes can breed with other certain mosquitoes, or whatever the insect is that happens to be infected. Anyway, back to this engineering parasites. Viable options for developing a malaria vaccine. We are currently engineering the next generation of attenuated parasite strains with the aim to enter clinical studies soon. And for the first time, researchers created a weakened version of the human malaria parasite, by altering its DNA. So he's not talking about Wolbachia. Well, that's a whole nother one. They tested the safety of the newly modified parasite by injecting 6 human volunteers through mosquito bites. 5 of the 6 volunteers showed no infection with the parasite, suggesting that the new genetic technique has potential as a basis for a malaria vaccine. Well, what could go wrong there? I mean, come on. So you know, and that was 2010, and now 2013. Now let's go back to 2008. And this is right when the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation started sprinkling all this money around, looking for ways to, of course, cure malaria, because that was kind of what their big push was in the beginning. And we started seeing stories about genetic modification on mosquitoes. This is from American Free Press. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation awarded $100,000 each on Wednesday to scientists in 22 countries, including funding for a Japanese proposal to turn mosquitoes into flying syringes delivering vaccines. And that was the story that we read above, where they received that funding, and yeah, they were able to develop something like that. Among the proposals receiving funding was one from the Hiroyuki Masoko at Jichi Medical University in Japan. Masoko thinks it may be possible to turn mosquitoes that normally transmit disease into flying syringes, so that when they bite a human, they deliver vaccines, said the Gates Foundation. Now, you know, it was right around that time, too, 2008, where the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, their old website, had a whole section that had shown in detail. You could click on it, and they would give you the projects that they were funding. And one of those projects, and I read it myself, it's no longer there, but I read it myself, was the malaria goat, where they had crossbred or genetically engineered a goat with the same sort of what they were talking about here, where they had a weakened malaria organism, spliced it into the goat, so that when they then took these transgenic goats and gave them to African villagers, when they milked the cow and drank the milk, they were getting a vaccination. So now the story comes out. We dug into the history back a while ago of edible vaccines, because I had never heard of edible vaccines before. But it appears that they've been doing research for quite a number of years. And some of the first research we saw was back again in 2008. And, you know, I never looked at who funded that, but would be interesting to see. where they were messing around with the vaccine banana. Then we find out there's been all kinds of genetic modification and stuff put into our food since then. They were working on the potato. They had, I think it was an apple we read as well. And there were a few other foods that they already had made into like edible vaccines. But look at this. This is from February 2nd, 2016, turning plants into drug factories. Now, we remember during the Ebola outbreak, there was again another big race and all this funding for vaccinations. And one of the projects that were being worked on down in, I don't remember if the lab itself was down at Texas A&M or up in Kentucky, one of them, but they were growing tobacco with the help of one of the tobacco companies. Again, I don't remember if it was Philip Morris or one of the other ones, but it was very convenient since, you know, they're all again smoking now. And so the big tobacco giants were having issues with profits. So let's get them in on the genetic engineering and drugging the populace with this new mad science. So they were using tobacco plants. And this was called the Blue Angel Program. It was funded by DARPA. It originally started as Universal Flu Vaccine Project back again in 2008, but then they morphed it to Ebola. But what they were doing was genetically modifying. They were soaking this tobacco. They were drowning it in some, and again, I haven't read it in so long, so it doesn't matter, but they were doing all this crazy stuff to the tobacco plant and slicing and dicing genes, getting it to express antibodies, and then producing vaccines out of that. First of all, it was genetically modified tobacco. Second of all, who the hell knows what they were putting in there to express stuff out. But the main point of the matter is that they wanted to be able to push these as a new solution because it's so difficult, they say, to make vaccines, especially the flu vaccine, in chicken eggs. Well, now they got it coming and going, turning plants into drug factories. That is the title of the story out of Scientific American. Researchers are developing genetically modified plants that could be used as pharmaceutical biofactories to produce inexpensive, ingestible medicines. We found out two of the easiest places to cross the blood-brain barrier and the blood barrier into the bloodstream. One is intranasally, and two is through the gut. So this would be very convenient for them. One day soon, I joked yesterday, by the way, about how, Johnny, eat your tomato to get your to protect yourself against measles, but that's not too far of a stretch. The day could come soon when patients could be taking their heart medicine as a sprinkling of seeds on cereal or treating cancer with a cup of herbal tea. Yeah, the day could come soon. No, there is no natural medicine out there. Don't worry about it. There isn't stuff out there that, like turmeric, that can already cause apoptosis in cancer cells. No, we'll make it for you with genetically modified mad science, and we'll tell you what you can take. This is not woo being peddled by an alternative medicine salesman. Look at how they put us down. An alternative medicine salesman. It is the aim of a pair of biochemists who want to provide the next generation of drugs for everything from HIV to chronic pain to the world's poor. Yeah, always for the poor. Just like the malaria goats. By producing them in fields using genetically modified plants instead of in factories. Biochemist David Krayek at the University of Queensland. And, you know, I'm seeing so much out of the University of Queensland and seeing so much DARPA money being sprinkled in Australia. I'm wondering, like, why? Why are we sprinkling taxpayer dollars in a foreign country? I mean, is Australia that bought and sold that we're just giving them tons and gobs of money of taxpayer funding to work on all these projects? This is the second one in 2 days that I saw from the University of Queensland. The other one was about the Wolbachia bacteria infecting mosquitoes. We read that one yesterday. Biochemist David Krayak at the University of Queensland and Marilyn Anderson at La Trobe University have received Australia's Remicade Biomedical Research Award worth some $700,000 to develop the technology to turn plants into cheap biofactories for drugs made of mini proteins called cyclotides, C-Y-C-L-O-T-I-D-E-S. Like other proteins, cyclotides comprise a string of amino acids, the body's building blocks, but unlike most proteins, though, the ends of the cyclotides are joined together so the molecule forms a circle. Cross-linking disulfide bonds reinforce the protein structure, and it is this structure that helps cyclotides combine the best features of a small molecule drug like acetaminophen or a larger protein, peptide or protein drugs like insulin. And because of their complexity, peptide drugs are more precisely targeted and cause fewer side effects than small molecule drugs, but the same complexity makes them more difficult to store and to administer. Unlike small molecule drugs, peptide compounds normally have to be injected because if swallowed, they are broken down into amino acids, just like any other digested protein, long before they can be absorbed and transported to their target. Without the weak point of loose ends, cyclotides can resist degradation by our digestive system. So this is great. This is making them like be able to pass through your digestive system, get right into your small intestine and be absorbed. Without the weak point loose ends of cyclotides that can resist degradation by our digestive system, allowing them to reach their targets intact. We think peptides are the future of drugs for reasons of being more selective, more potent, and potentially safer, because when a peptide eventually breaks down, it just breaks down into amino acids, and amino acids are basically food. Cyclotides are first discovered in 1960 when a Red Cross doctor, Lawrence Gran, noticed that women in the Congo drink tea made from a local weed to speed up childbirth. The peptide Kalata B1 was quickly identified as the active ingredient, but scientists could not work out why the molecule retained its activity after being boiled and drunk until Crank and his colleagues discovered the cyclized structure in 1995. Since then, hundreds of cyclotides have been found in plants around the world. You know, actually, so if cyclotides allow things to pass through your digestive system into your small intestine, that's something to look at, like a list of plants that have cyclotides in them, because those would be the medicinal, I would think, right? So they can absorb directly. I'm going to have to look into that. Since then, hundreds of cyclotides have been found in plants around the world, and Krayak believes that there are as many as 50,000. Agricultural scientists have already put some of these discoveries to use by genetically modifying cotton to express Kalata B1, which Krayak and Anderson discovered also has strong insecticidal properties that protects the crop from caterpillars without using pesticide sprays. How nice is that? I wonder where they have all that. Is it in India they planted all that genetically modified cotton? But if they put Kalata B1 proteins into cotton and then give it to pregnant women as a baby blanket gift or something, isn't it going to induce what? To speed up childbirth? What is that? Why would they put it into cotton? And can those properties be transferred through the cotton itself? Wow. See, again, like I've said, this is all such new science and such mad science. All these things that they're doing and they're testing and they're making, but nobody is thinking 10 steps ahead as to the what ifs. Nobody's being a thinker. They're looking at the moment and, oh, if I give my name on a paper, I'll be rich and famous. You know, but they're not looking at what the potential issues could be. So that's a big question to me. Why would you be putting something that can speed up childbirth, you know, already for a fact, because that's how it was discovered, into cotton? Because it's insecticidal? I mean, babies wear cotton. Children wear cotton. We wash our faces with cotton. We wear pajamas that are cotton. That's really unbelievable. Scientists are not limited to natural cyclotides, though. Krayak has also developed a chemical reaction technique to join the ends of naturally linear peptides, giving them the same resistant properties. So they found a way now to make things that normally were a string of proteins into modified proteins using chemical reactions. He's also used this technique to cyclize a peptide from the venom of a cone snail to make a painkiller that is 120 times more potent than the currently used drug gabapentin in rat trials. And to produce enough peptides for human trials, Krayak turned to his collaborator Anderson's expertise in genetic modification technology to create plants that'll do the work for them, avoiding the chemical waste generated by laboratory synthesis. Oh yeah, it's all genetic modification is so environmentally friendly. Bolstered by the Ramakati Award funding, yeah, the big fat $700,000 check, however, the researchers are aiming even higher now by engineering plants that will produce controlled doses of drugs in edible or drinkable form, even when grown in a remote village's community garden. This idea is not so far-fetched. Techniques are well established for genetically modifying plants using the soil bacterium Agrobacterium tumefaciens, T-U-M-E-F-A-C-I-E-N-S, to transfer the DNA. What? So this is using bacterium to transfer DNA in plants to then produce large amounts of protein. Even antibodies against Ebola are produced in GM tobacco, and we talked about that. Scientists routinely build the gene construct with promoters that only switch on the gene in the plant where they want it to, making it easy to target drug production to the seeds, tubers, or other designated parts of the plant. A targeted expression of drugs to the edible parts of the plant, Krayak and Anderson hope to avoid the need to extract the cyclotides, and if it does become necessary, the plants can simply be boiled to deactivate any of the other proteins. The main technological challenge now is to get the GM plants to reliably express a consistent dose of the drugs so that the users are not under or overdosed. Oh, well, gee, thank you very much. Initially, the team plans to select plants producing a high enough level of drug and then to clone these plants for further study in greenhouses to determine the best conditions. The controlled growing environment of a greenhouse should allow growers to get a precise dose from their plants. You know, tell you what, I just saw a story today about Australia getting ready to approve the growing of medical marijuana. And how interesting, they're doing all kinds. And it's not talking about smoking it, but who knows? They're talking about doing all this research and coming up with ways to express drugs or whatever through genetically modified plants. And now Australia, this big socialist country that's very invasive into all your health care, is about to legalize growing marijuana nationwide. It's got to make you wonder, especially since they seem to be at the forefront of like all this mad science. Back to where we were anyway. So the growing in the environment of a greenhouse should allow growers to get a precise dose from their plant. But the project also aims to develop cheap kits to test the amount of any drugs produced in the field, right? They have all of these new sensors and dipsticks or whatever to be able to take swabs and test things in the field. That, again, was more DARPA-funded research. To get cheap test kits to test the amounts of any drugs produced in the field, oh, here we go, such as dipsticks coated with antibodies to the drug. This is relatively easy for protein, says Craig. But yet another important hurdle is to overcome the fears about the safety of genetically modified plants and food. We will work with the community to explain and demonstrate why our plants are safe, why you should trust us, why you should believe that our funded research has absolutely no agenda after it leaves our hands. We'll tell you again how great it is and how it's in your best interest. But I don't trust the people who are in charge of all the technology. And neither should you. We will work with the community to explain and demonstrate why our plants will be safe, says Craig, pointing out the weight of evidence in favor of genetic modification technology. At least 3 billion meals derived from GM plants have been eaten by people and animals in 29 countries over 15 years without a single substantiated case of harm. Now let's read that quotation again, because this is his entire premise for working with the community to explain and demonstrate why his plants are safe is because, quote, at least 3 billion meals derived from genetically modified plants have already been eaten by people and animals in 29 countries over 15 years without a single substantiated case of harm. Plausible deniability. Hey, you can't prove it was the genetically modified food that gave you the leaky gut. You can't prove that maybe it was the genetic modification of the BT corn that caused you to have problems and then autoimmune diseases. You can't prove that it was the glyphosate we sprayed all over that corn that caused the suppression of your cytochrome P450 enzyme that then caused you to not be able to metabolize drugs properly or gave you diabetes or gave you a myriad of other Western diseases that can be blamed on this. No, how could you prove that? I can't believe how irresponsible for a researcher to say that. And I noticed he used the buzzword, substantiated. Well, you're not going to be able to substantiate it. Because there's so many factors that go into trying to discover what made you ill. But there's a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that, hey, there are issues. Hey, there are a lot of people with allergies. I talked about that flavor saver tomato back in the mid-90s. That went on the shelves. We were never told that it was genetically modified, but hey, I didn't know in those days, but I ended up all of a sudden having this wicked allergy to tomatoes. Every time I ate tomatoes, I'd get head to toe hives. I had to stop eating tomatoes for a long time. And again, like I said, let's trust the psychopaths with telling us what's safe. And let's trust the psychopaths, especially as they're passing the TPP and they're getting rid of all these labeling laws and country of origin and everything else. Let's trust them to tell us what's in our food and to tell us that it's good for us. The same ones telling us that eating beef is bad for the environment because of the methane now. And we should be eating insect protein. Now we're going to read this one more time and then keep going. At least 3 billion meals derived from genetically modified plants have been eaten by people and animals in 29 countries over 15 years without a single substantiated case of harm. The plants will also only be released to the public once the drugs they produce have been accepted by regulatory bodies like the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And we read a story a while back, probably 3-4 months ago now, about this very technology being used to circumvent GM labeling laws, to circumvent the label of being genetically modified, because the drug itself isn't necessarily genetically modified. The plant that expressed it was. Slippery, slippery, slippery slope. Although Craig and Anderson are hopeful that pharmaceutical companies and governments will help develop the work with inexpensive and environmentally gentle production systems as a major selling point, they aim to make their medicine plants as user-friendly as possible for poor countries all around the world. We really think this could have major advantages for the developing world, Craig told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. The life expectancy of a male in Tanzania today is 37 years, and that is because of HIV/AIDS. And it's not because we don't have good medicines for that. It's because they cannot afford to live. They cannot afford it over there. But if we could be, for example, putting an anti-HIV medicine into a plant that they could be growing in their own backyard, making a tea from the plant, in theory, it could be something that could revolutionize the treatment of HIV. Yeah. Why don't we just find a natural plant that you can't patent or anything that might be a cure? T.J. Higgins, a scientist at CSIRO, which is the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization in Australia, who has used similar technology to develop a pest-resistant cowpea. It's not cowpea, it's cowpea, P-E-A, for subsistence farmers in sub-Saharan communities, believes the time is right for projects like Craic and Anderson's. Based on our experience developing a GM cowpea, the community is ready for a GM product that contributes to their health, provided that it is passed all of the safety requirements. You know, we watched something way back when there was a video that came out of Australia talking about nanotechnology and food, and they had all these really strong labeling laws that made certain that they told you that there was nanotechnology in the food or some sort of nanoparticles. And I wonder if now, as everybody is inking on to the TPP, if that's going to go away. You know, I'm also seeing, so not only are they developing these genetically modified plants to express all kinds of drugs, and they're also getting ready to legalize growing medical marijuana all over Australia, and they're also developing in Queensland, again, these Wolbachia-infected mosquitoes to fight viruses such as dengue or Zika or whatever else. This Wolbachia that causes males to die, feminization, parthenogenesis, that was the other one I couldn't remember, which is females reproducing without males, as well as cytoplasmic incompatibility. We also had the story yesterday about Australia cutting 110 climate scientist jobs out of 140 because they said that the science is settled. So don't worry about it. The science is settled on climate change. We're telling you that, just like we're telling you that genetically modified foods are safe. And so there's no more need for basic research. So we're going to let you all go. Story came out of the Daily Mail yesterday, and I had read this before in another publication, but it was interesting because they spoke about this the other day, and then, boop, here comes the story. New York, Shanghai, and London underwater. Chilling study warns that we only have a few more decades to reverse man-made climate change, and says the effects will be felt for 10,000 years. This study looked at climate data for over the last 20,000 years, and it predicted what could happen under four scenarios in the next 10,000. I mean, this is the entire agenda. It's all being spun by climate change. We got to do genetically modified plants because of climate change as well. And the growing population, oh my God, stop having babies. In Australia too, I just saw they were developing, I mentioned the Bill Gates condom. We all laughed at that. But I saw now they're developing some ultra-thin condom in Australia as well. So Australia seems to be at the very forefront of all this. And their people don't seem to be standing up. They're just taking it. They're being taken what they're given. Sea level rise caused by man-made climate change could last 10,000 years, according to a stunning, stunning new study. Even if global warming falls below the government's targets of 2 degrees Celsius, around 20% of the world's population will be forced to migrate away from the coasts. That means that unless we cut carbon emissions drastically, major cities such as New York, London, and Shanghai will be completely submerged, scientists have warned. Yes, the scientists that we should trust so much. All right, let's go on to another story. Got a couple minutes left. Mayo researchers identify a new Borrelia species that causes Lyme disease. Oh, so we have another Lyme bacteria that we didn't know about, newly discovered. Until now, Borrelia burgdorferi was the only species believed to cause Lyme disease in North America. But Mayo Clinic researchers, in collaboration with WHO, the Centers for Disease Control, and health officials from Minnesota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin, have discovered a new bacterial species that causes Lyme disease in people. This new species has been provisionally named Borrelia mayoni, M-A-Y-O-N-I-I. Prior to this findings, the only species believed to cause Lyme disease in North America was Borrelia burgdorferi, B-U-R-G-D-O-R-F-E-R-I. A paper recently published in The Lancet Infectious Diseases, Mayo Clinic scientists tested samples from patients from 2003 to 2014 for evidence of Lyme disease using a method called polymerase chain reaction. And from 2012 to 2014, so just from 2012, the researchers noticed some unusual test results from 6 of the 9,000 samples of residents from Minnesota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin. So from 2012 to 2014, we just had this new mysterious organism that appeared. Seriously, how many of us are going to believe that it was just, and it must have mutated because of climate change? And there's actually even new symptoms to this. Typical symptoms of Lyme include headache, fever, neck pain, rash, and arthritis in the later stages. This new one creates vomiting, nausea, and diffuse rashes all over the body rather than a single bullseye rash, and higher concentrations of the bacteria in the blood. So now we have two Lyme diseases still in ticks spreading across North America. We read about them cracking the genome to the bed bug yesterday, with the hopes of battling the bedbug epidemic we apparently are having. So, hey, don't worry about it. We might have some genetically modified bedbugs in our near future. And to end the show, if I can get there. And it's not going to let me, but hold on, because I have the other computer up. Let's find out. ScienceAlert.com, 2 days ago, nearly 25% of all white-tailed deer on America's East Coast all have malaria. Yeah, you knew malaria. Malaria was coming to the homeland. Though they are one of America's favorite game animals, white-tailed deer, yes, the food supply that everyone thinks they're going to eat when the shit hits the fan, white-tailed deer are basically walking bags of disease. From Lyme disease to chronic wasting disease to the blue tongue virus, deer just can't catch a break. And now the news is even more bleak because, according to a new study, they also carry a native form of malaria. Hey, the good news is that humans are likely, we don't know for sure, but they're likely, just like the bovine, some sort of bovine virus that was in the milk that now they're finding in breast cancer. Yeah, but they didn't worry about that because they didn't think it would cause problems in humans. Well, this likely won't cause malaria in humans. The research team, led by Ellen Martinson from Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute, estimates between 18 and 25% of all white-tailed deer living along America's East Coast are infected, which makes the white-tailed deer the first and only mammal species in North or South America to carry the native form of the disease. Wow, how interesting is that? So they're the only mammal, the only one to carry the native form. They discover the parasite when collecting mosquitoes, and now we're going to be doing all kinds of research on it. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around because if you can believe it, the show is already over. Lonnie Clark is live up next, and it's Wednesday night, so Josh is live at 6 p.m. Eastern. The Boys from New York, Continue Condition with Jonathan and Steven at 8. Truth or Talk at 9 p.m. Eastern, and live with Anti-Media Radio, Mr. Nick Burnaby and D.B. Schwartz at 11. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Have a good time.